Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello to our listeners. And our topic today is...
Why should anyone get married these days?
Indeed. Why should they? Well, we'll have a discussion about that, and I just will note that one of the reasons we're including this, aside from the fact that it's in the book that we're going to talk about in a commercial a little bit, is because it comes up in my practice all the time. This is a very common topic, so we'll be talking about that shortly. Before we do that, we want to invite you to let other folks know about this podcast and grow our listenership even further. You can do that by, of course, just telling your friends about it. You know, email folks and send them the link. Wherever you found this podcast, that's where you can find it, and pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. And if you do things like follow us on whatever podcast site you get your podcast from, or rate us, or comment on our social media posts, anything like that, that does help people find us, and we're always delighted to have new listeners. So before we get started on our topic today, indeed, we're going to do a commercial for the book I wrote.
So the book is called Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Indeed. And I guess I should mention my name here, too. I'm Dr. Bruce Chalmer. That's how you'll find it. You can search for Chalmer or Dr. Bruce Chalmer. The doctor is in the name of the book. And the book is organized along the lines of the 7 words that give the title of this podcast, Couples Therapy in 7 Words. And the 7 words are...
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Indeed. And so if you notice, that little formula is in 3 parts: be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And the 4th part is now go and learn. That's a little paraphrase from Hillel, for those of you who might recognize that. And so those are the 4 parts of the book. We talk about kindness, what that means. I talk about the whole notion of panic and what it's good for, but also the problems it can cause. And then I talk about faith. And if anything, that's kind of the most distinguishing characteristic of this book. There's lots of really good books on couples out there, and actually a fair number of clunkers as well. But there's some good ones out there that I respect highly. And most of them indeed talk about the notion of avoiding panic in how you are with your partner. But I really go into faith as the antidote for panic. And it doesn't have to be religious faith, but faith is really the key to healing. And so if you're intrigued by that prospect, get a hold of the book and you'll see. And then the 4th part of the book is where we apply those principles to the kind of problems that I see a lot in my practice and the kind of problems that people talk about whether or not they're in therapy. And one of them actually is the issue of whether or not to get married is going to be the topic of today's podcast. So we will be getting to that shortly. So now, on with the podcast. So as we said, our topic today is why should anyone get married these days? So what do you think, Judy, before we even get into it, why should anybody get married?
Well, I believe that studies have shown that there are economic benefits to being married, and not just the combination of 2 incomes, which you can have if you're just cohabiting. Studies have shown that married couples do tend to have higher incomes. They do tend to buy homes together, whereas unmarried couples tend to be more renters. There is a higher level of education, and children seem to be doing better in school and have economic advantages that they don't have from unmarried couples.
Yeah, I've seen some of those same studies. I will, of course, old statistician that I am, mm-hmm. I'm of course going to comment that a lot of those studies that will note, indeed, if you look at things like education levels and socioeconomic status, income, things like that, people who have higher education and higher socioeconomic status tend to be married more than other folks. Mm-hmm. But the direction of the causality arrow there is not so clear. You know what I mean? It could be that, indeed, people who are more educated are more likely to get married rather than that getting married makes you, you know, means that you're going to do better in life. Mm-hmm. I think it there's probably some piece of it that's both ways. But I want to push back a little, and of course, this is part of what I talk about in the book. All of those things you said make sense, of course, except that you can nowadays, in ways that were different from when we were kids, you can buy a house if mm-hmm. you're not married, you know, together with a partner. You can buy a house together. It doesn't just have to be in one name.
Right.
That was not, I'm pretty sure when I was young, that would not have been possible. You know, if an unmarried couple would have had a very hard time getting a mortgage.
Sure.
But now that's commonplace. I hear about it all the time. You know, when I was a kid, the notion of having, that's the term, you know, having a child out of wedlock mm-hmm. Was this shame.
It was whispered. It was very shameful.
Exactly, yeah. Even, you know, obviously people have been having sex without being married from time immemorial, but you didn't talk about it that much. You know, it's like, at least in the circles that I grew up in, you know, in my life, when I was living with my first girlfriend, and we weren't married, my parents knew about it and were not happy about it. And they did not want, especially my mother's parents, to know about it, especially mm-hmm. my mother's mother. May she rest in peace. Wonderful person, but she would have been, shall we say, rather judgmental. They did find out about it, actually, before we ended up getting married, but to my first wife. And they were, you know, they made their peace with it, but it was something they had to make their peace with.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, with our kids living with their respective, you know, girlfriends or boyfriend, we don't bat an eye.
Right.
It's not like, oh my God, how can you do that? It's right. like, no, of course. That's
right.
I mean,
yeah, it's a lot more accepted, and in fact, that's pretty much the norm these days too.
Yeah, that's exactly. You live together before you get married. And even things like, you know, people talk, this is a big issue for gay marriage, especially, you know, what about visiting someone in the hospital? You know, mm-hmm. if it's only family, you know, mm-hmm. you have to be married, you have to be family. Even now, there are ways where you can designate somebody as family, whether or not they are legally your family. So an inheritance and things like that, you can designate people as your beneficiary. You know, there are ways you can do most of the things you were referring to, you know, advantages for marriage, mm-hmm. you can do that without actually getting married.
So why get married?
What a great question. You know, gee, maybe we should do a podcast on that, you know? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, of course, there's a chapter in the book about that. And in why would I write that chapter? You know, I'm writing that chapter because this comes up a lot with couples that I work with. Why get married at all? Mm-hmm. So there are a number of reasons that people will tend to give. And, you know, it's not, it's by no means balanced gender-wise among, when I'm working with, you know, cisgendered heterosexual couples, which is most of the couples I work with, it's almost always the woman who's the one saying, come on, why can't we get married? And it's always, if somebody's hesitant, it's almost always the man. I have worked with exceptions to that, so it's not like 100%. But there's good historical, economic, you know, evolutionary reasons, I think, and I'll invite you to address this as a woman, you know, it seems to me there's plenty of good reason why women are the ones who are saying, come on, we need marriage. What can you talk, you know, speak to that? What are your thoughts about that?
You know, that's a tough one because I don't want to speak for all women. You know?
Well, of course not, but yeah, speak for yourself.
I can speak for me. I like being in a partnership, and I do like the stability that marriage offers. I do like knowing that I think marriage does confer a sort of status, if you will, for lack of a better word, that, you know, we're partnered for life, and mm-hmm. God willing. And that there's a recognition in our families that, you know, we're not just, I don't know, we're partnered. You and I are together, and your family's my family, and my family's your mm-hmm. family, and, you know, and that's the way it is.
So. Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned a status difference. And again, I think that's something, and again, I'm an outsider to women, right? I'm a man, but I think that is something that is especially, it's more true for women than men, that to be, you know, that concept of, you know, that awful term old maid, you know, for When I was a kid, it was like any woman over 30 who wasn't married was considered an old maid.
An old maid, a spinster.
A spinster. And that had a negative connotation to it in ways it didn't for men at all. It's like,
right, he was a bachelor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of holdover from that and people feeling like there's, you know, you're not, you can't quite hold up your head in society, I think, especially as a woman, if you don't have that ring on your finger. Yeah, it's unfair,
well,
obviously.
Like Beyonce says, if you liked it, you should have put a ring on it, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And that, of course, relates to some very old stuff about, you know, the there is, gets back to the legal protection of it in many places still, and certainly even in our culture historically, women's economic status was highly questionable if they weren't married. It was very difficult for women even to hold property.
Right. And that's changed a lot, you know, and you know, we see a lot of younger women who are marrying men that are not as high income earners as they are. So you think, well, what is the advantage? What is their advantage to getting married?
Well, clearly, it's not that they're feeling like the only way they'll survive economically is by getting married. And then, indeed, you know, women of the kind of our kids' generation, even to some extent our generation, you know, compared to our parents' generation, but especially our kids' generation, I think young women are growing up with the assumption that they can earn a living and expect to do so and therefore aren't looking to the men in their lives to need to do that. It gets interesting in my experience working with couples. It gets interesting when they have kids, because what that translates into very often is a very sensible, considered decision. If she earns a lot more than he does, that he should be the one staying home with the baby.
And we're seeing more of that, actually.
And we are. And it's, yeah, I make no judgment against that. What's interesting is that I've worked with lots of couples where the woman who's in that position, kind of fighting with herself almost, you know, because she's agreed with her husband and her husband's agreed with her. And they're, you know, it's in theory, it's a fine arrangement. But she has found herself, a lot of these women I'm talking about, have found herself really questioning, you know, I didn't have a baby for somebody else to raise the baby, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's a conflict for a lot of women.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think of marriage as a partnership. And in ways that I guess cohabiting isn't. You know, if you are building something for the future in a marriage, then you and your partner are in it together because you have made that commitment to each other. Now, I'm not going to say divorce doesn't happen because we know the statistics are quite high.
Yeah.
But you do go into it with the idea that we are going to build this life together. And, you know, make it a good world for our children.
You absolutely do. And, you know, so what I comment in the book is, that of course, that's true. But what I would claim is you better already feel that level of commitment just to live together and have children and buy a house and all, you know, just as if those are small things, you know. You better have that level of commitment already. And as you pointed out, marriage doesn't guarantee a thing about that. The statistics, I looked it up for the book. It's not 50%, but it's in the 40s of first marriages, at least in this country, that end in divorce. So it doesn't guarantee, you know, it certainly, people are making a commitment. They're saying their vows, but it doesn't guarantee that it's really going to hold up.
No.
So if I'm saying that, why the heck then should anybody get married, right?
Why get married? Good
Indeed.
Question, Bruce.
So yeah, here's my little pet answer for it. And I like it, by golly. My answer is that you get married when you realize that marriage isn't just about you. It's not just about, you know, ourselves. It's not just about us as a couple. It's about something much bigger than us. You know, in religious settings, they make that very clear. In religious settings, certainly in, you know, Western religions, and this is true of the three main monotheistic religions, you know, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, you get married before God. It's like, no, it's not just the two of you and your families here. It's like God's involved in this, and that means this is way bigger. And even if you're not religious, even if you're not, you know, kind of traditionally a believer in terms of theism, the notion that you get married before a community and And even the legal aspects, you know, the state treats you differently. Everybody treats you differently when you're married, whether you like it or not. And, you know, I've noted when I've talked with folks about this, we've been to lots of weddings, of course, and very often people will write their own vows. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. I don't mean to be cynical about it. They often say very beautiful things, and it's, you know, and I will shed tears at the vows that people write. Having said that, I also have this little voice in me that's saying, you know, I don't mean to sound condescending, but it's like, oh, isn't that cute? You think you can define marriage. You're in for a big surprise. Because you can't. It's bigger. It is, whether you like it or not, marriage, you don't get to define what marriage means to you, because everybody, the whole world, treats you differently once you're married, whether you like it or not. And I say whether you like it or not because not everybody likes it. Mm. You know, it imposes on you. It grants you status, but it also imposes status on you. So even the simple question, how are you? You know, if somebody says to me, how are you? They're, most people who know us are not just asking, how am I that, you know, how am I as an individual? You know, mm-hmm. they are saying, how are you guys? Mm-hmm. You know, we're a unit as well as individuals.
Yeah.
And that can be kind of terrifying for some folks. So, you know, it isn't for everybody. But again, my answer to the question, why the heck get married, is when you realize it isn't about you. And of course, if you find that a level of intimacy that you find attractive rather than terrifying.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you know this about me, it's funny. They used to say if somebody wasn't the marrying kind, that was code. If you're speaking of a man, that was code for saying he's gay. I'm not gay.
Well, also means he's like a bounder.
Well, or a bounder, exactly. And I'm not saying that folks who don't want to get married are either necessarily gay or, you know, a bounder. I am saying I'm the marrying kind in the sense that I've always liked the notion of being married. You know, I was even in a marriage that didn't work out. I was glad to be married, you know, and I'm mm-hmm. especially delighted to be in a good marriage. But marriage, there I have met people whom, you know, I greatly respect, but I've met people who clearly aren't oriented toward marriage. They mm-hmm. they try, but they just don't want to be mm-hmm. in that kind of unit.
Right.
And, you know, that's
understandable.
It is. But it's painful if you're somebody trying to be married to someone like that.
Right.
And that does come up a lot.
And I think we have a letter from a listener this week with just that situation.
Well, what a good segue. Let's go to that now.
Okay. So Madison writes, "Dear Dr. Chalmer, I've been dating Al for 5 years. I'm 29 and he's 35. Neither of us has been married before. We have a really great relationship and get along very well. The biggest problem we seem to have is that I'd like to get married, and Al doesn't seem to be in any hurry. He'll say things like, 'Why ruin a good thing?' or 'Most of our friends have gotten divorced. I don't want that to happen to us.' By the way, both his and my parents are divorced. I am a planner and like to know where things will be in the years ahead. I feel like I'm just drifting and not working towards a goal. We've talked about having children, and Al says we don't need to be married to have children. I know that, but I'd feel more stable if we were married. I don't want to force him into marrying me, but I also don't want to be in this extended adolescent existence of dating forever. Is it time to cut bait?"
Wow, what a good question, you know? Wow. And that is interesting that she identifies it as an extended adolescent existence. You know what I mean? You can tell what she's thinking. It's mm-hmm. like, you're not really a grown-up.
Right, grow up.
If you're just shacking up with somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Madison, I think it's time to cut bait.
Interesting.
Al, like you said, Al doesn't seem to be in any hurry, and you do seem to be in a hurry. You know, 5 years is a long time to invest in a relationship to have a guy just saying, well, maybe yes, maybe no. Uh-huh. And, you know, I can tell, you know, you said both your sets of parents are divorced. That's a scary thing, you know, and statistics do show that if you come from a family where, you know, divorce is prevalent, then, yeah, you know, you don't have good role models for good relationships. So, you know, either cut bait or I would say see a marriage counselor.
It's interesting. So that, yeah, you're right where, because I think your attitude, if you think about it, you're thinking similarly, yeah, this seems kind of adolescent. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? You're kind of resonating with the way Madison views it. I'm of course, the last thing you said about, hey, see a marriage counselor. I'm sitting here, you know, yes, indeed, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, yeah, this would be one of those things I'd say, oh, don't cut bait too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, maybe you've got a really good thing going here. And if you can actually, you meaning plural of both of them,
right,
can tolerate, you know, my catchphrase, tolerate the anxiety,
tolerate,
you know.
Tolerate the anxiety.
Yeah. If they can tolerate the anxiety of actually exploring this
mm-hmm.
without freaking out, they may discover that they can get someplace.
Ah.
You know, not to put my thumb on the scale, so to speak, but I'm guessing if they get someplace, it'll be getting married. Do you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? I wouldn't imagine Madison's going to say, you know, have this blinding flash of light and say, oh, what am I worried about? We're fine not being married. I don't think that's likely. But it is entirely possible for that to happen to Al. I've seen it. Not always.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plenty of couples end up, you know, splitting up over this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen people in Al's position, once they can open their mind to why it's so important to her, you know, it won't work well if he says, well, all right, if it's that important to you, I don't care, but let's get married.
Right.
I've seen that too.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be terribly satisfying for Madison. But I have seen people in Al's position say, I never understood this before until I really listened to what you're saying. Or, you know, again, from a gendered perspective, think about it from a woman's point of view. It's not surprising that women want that kind of clarity that is affirmed by the community. It's affirmed by all. It's, you know, not just about status, as we were talking earlier, but about that sense of feeling like this is a well-defined partnership that everybody has a stake in. Because if she's going to have kids, you know, saying the obvious here, you know, when a man and woman have a child, and I'm a father, and I absolutely, you know, dearly love my children, but I've never been a mother, and there's something different about being a mother.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, then, oh my God, you're the ones who carry the baby and give birth and nurse and, you know, all that stuff for which you need help
mm-hmm.
in ways that men don't. So just that is enough to orient women toward saying, I need somebody who I can count on. And if he's not willing to take this step, I'm not sure I can count on him. I think when men come to understand it, we can sometimes come around. Whether that would happen with Al or not, who knows?
Yeah. So you think that counseling might be a good next step for them?
Yeah. And at the risk of, gee, what a surprising thing. You know, if you ask a surgeon, how do you think I had to treat this problem? The surgeon's apt to saying, you know, you probably need surgery. You know? I've known surgeons not to say that. And you know what? There have been times, not that unusual, when somebody will say, do you think this calls for therapy?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I don't know, not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, oh, absolutely, you know. But having said all that, yeah. I think for Madison and Al, that would be a really good next step
mm-hmm.
if they're willing. Now, look, if he's not willing to do that, which is a real common guy thing, then she's really got a problem, you know. And it wouldn't at all seem to me out of line for Madison to say, look, either we're going to find a way to talk about this where we both feel understood, or it is over.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, for her to just sort of sit with it. I guess I'm thinking of many, many couples I've worked with over the years where that's what the woman has been doing. And it's just, it ends up being too painful.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I think that they would both benefit by getting everything out in the open. And if they can't do it with just each other, to have a third party help them get some clarity on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, so you've brought me around from, yes, cut bait. if your relationship is really good and you do want to explore and you're not ready to cut bait yet, then I would say seek a good counselor who could work with the two of you and help both of you clarify your position somewhat.
Well, Madison, I hope that helps.
And so I want to invite our listeners, if you, like Madison, have questions about your relationship or have topics that you'd like to suggest for our show, you can always talk to us about that. You can email us, go to bruce@brucechalmer.com. That's our email address. or visit the website brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you go to the podcast tab, you will see that's where, first of all, you can look at, listen again to all of our greatest hits. Actually, they're all available through that. Or you can contact us and make suggestions. And among the things we would love you to suggest are guests for us to interview. If you've listened to some of our earlier podcasts, including the one just previous to this one, we've had some really fascinating guests and have a lot of fun doing that. And I think it makes for some very interesting shows. So let us know if you have somebody you think we ought to interview, and that could include yourself. And you can do that by going to brucechalmer.com and go to the podcast tab. So now, before we conclude, we are going to have another commercial break for the book.
And the book is called Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And this book is available anywhere you can get books. You can get it from your favorite local bookstore. They can order it for you. You can, of course, get it online these days. That's often how people do it. You can get it from Amazon. And if you go to Amazon, you can get the Kindle version. So it is available for e-reader as well as on paper. It's also available as an audiobook. And I actually did the narration for it. And we hope you will get hold of it. And when you do that, we hope you will go to Amazon and leave a review there, because that does help people find the book as well. And we've received some really lovely reviews. And again, if you're not sure, go there and read some of the reviews, and you'll see if this book might well be something for you to get and enjoy by yourself or with a partner. So, Judy, tell our listeners about some of our upcoming topics.
Right. So in some of our shows, we'll be discussing what can a couple do if one member is exploring the possibility that they're gender fluid or trans, intimacy in an era of hookups, and other topics, especially if you suggest them.
Indeed. And so please send us your suggestions, bruce@brucechalmer.com, and also comment and rate us and like and share our social media posts, and just tell your friends about our program. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.